You should know it is his destiny to bring about the destruction of the Earth. Not now, not tomorrow, but soon.
Okay, welcome to the Filmwork Podcast. Chris Droney is with me. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Stephen.
And we're going to do the Hellboy series, as we know it.
As we know thus far.
Hellboy 1 and 2. Hellboy came out in 2004. Hellboy 2 came out in 2008. We're going to run the numbers before I forget them.
I know.
So the first one cost about sort of 55 or so.
Cost 66. Made 99 million.
Right, so just shy of 100 million. The second one cost 85 and took 160.
Yeah. So a bit.
So they're both kind of in profit.
Both successes, essentially. The second one more so.
Yeah.
And of the two, which do you prefer?
That's actually a hard question, because I rewatched these together, not quite back to back, but within a week of each other, and I was like watching the first one, going, "Oh yeah, this one isn't as good as the second one." And I watched it, going, "There's tons of things in here that I still love."
Yeah.
But there's a lot in it that I wouldn't say I don't like, but that I could do without.
Okay.
And then I put on the second one, and I was like, actually, there's a little bit of repetition in here that I don't like, but there is so many more new things in here that I do love.
Mm.
So it's hard for me. Part of me wants to say two, but there's things going in one that I would not want to dismiss.
Fair enough. Okay.
So that completely did not answer your question.
Not at all.
So you're going to have the long answer instead, which is this podcast.
Okay. Well, let's just dive right into it then, and just straight off the bat, let's talk about the first one, Hellboy 1.
Here we go. Let's get straight into it, and where the fuck is Hellboy 3?
Yeah.
Right, Hellboy 1, I didn't see this. I didn't see either of them at the cinema, in fact. So maybe I'm partly to blame why there's no Hellboy 3.
I saw the first in the cinema, but not the second one.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, first one, and I did like it a lot. And, you know, what Ron Perlman, and I mean, I was not familiar with the comic book, looked it up, and thought, all right, cool, and Ron Perlman involved, I was like, solid, brilliant, can't wait, loved, I've always liked him. I saw, been watching him in the cinema since 1987, when the, after that, when the video came out for In the Name of the Rose, with Sean Connery and Christian Slater, where Ron Perlman played a bit of a crazy monk in it,
okay.
A Latin monk, and he was very good. And sort of been watching him from there. I mean, he did Beauty and the Beast on TV with the chick from the Terminator movies, Linda Hamilton.
Yeah.
And various things since. Obviously, he's known nowadays for being on Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
Yep. And various science fiction and fantasy movies. A lot of them straight to DVD, but also many of them in the cinema as well.
Was he in that tiny Punisher thing as well?
Tiny what?
The little Punisher web thing. Was that him?
Dirty Laundry?
Yeah.
Was he in that? I think he might have been, actually.
Yeah,
you're right.
He's going in the wheelchair. That was him.
Yeah.
He gets around.
Oh absolutely.
Yeah.
But I mean, even back in the day, I mean, he'd been working with Del Toro since Kronos, his first film. He was the bad guy in that.
Yeah.
And he also has worked with Jean-Pierre Jeunet, who did Alien Resurrection. He was in to that film, but he was in his previous film, The City of Lost Children, which was a very fantasy film. Now, you look at both of those films, and he's talking Spanish in one and French in the other, fluently.
Mm.
Multi-talented guy.
Yeah, but you can see that he may be overlooked because of his look. He's just this big, burly 60-year-old.
He's a big beast of a gorilla of a man. Yeah, you know, with a funny hairline.
I know. You might think, oh, this is just another big guy that can't act. But no,
it's a bit
can.
Like Mark Kermode.
Careful.
All right, I'll cut that out.
But no, he's got the chops. He's got acting chops in him.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And he'll also do independent cinema. Drive, he was in. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, no. Well, let's not keep
badgering on about him. But
so,
let's talk about him.
But it was like great, and he was in Hellboy. Fantastic makeup and everything, and he had carried the right attitude.
Yeah.
And it's an attitude that we're used to seeing with our heroes, you know, just cigar chomping, and they have an issue with authority, and they've got a big fucking gun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's got a big fucking gun.
He's got a few big fucking guns.
Yeah. But yeah, alright, so the backstory is basically
World War II.
Yeah, World War II. The Nazis are trying to open up the world to another world of beasties and stuff.
Because that's how they'll win.
Yes, that's how they'll win. And it all goes wrong for them. And in the process of this portal being opened...
And closed.
The one thing that comes through is this little...
Tiny little Hellboy beastie.
Yeah. Who is none the wiser of anything. So... Yeah. Gets raised by the good guys. So in this case, John Hurt's nice guy, whose name escapes me. I'm gonna call him the Professor.
Yeah.
Because he's got the glasses and the beard and yeah, so he's a professor. So the Professor guy raises him, and the next thing we know, it's present day, and it's the Bureau of Paranormal Investigation or whatever.
Yeah.
Where he's working. And it's not just him. There's other mutants there as well. He's got a buddy called Abe Sapien, who is essentially a fish.
Yeah,
a merman.
Yeah, it's tough to say what he is. He's just like this amphibious being.
But this is what's the name of the guy who David Hyde Pierce does the voice.
But it's Doug Jones that does.
Jones, thank you. Who had also, I mean, he would return in the sequel. He also did that creature with the eyes in its hands in Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah,
and Silver Surfer. Lots of skinny, creature roles he would play.
Yeah.
Like Brian Steele is in this as well. Is that a big giant beast that they're chasing after, Samuel?
Oh yeah.
And Brian Steele is a big wrestling-looking motherfucker. So you've also got skinny-looking little motherfuckers that do these kind of roles as well, dress up as the monster kind of thing. Mm. And Doug Jones always got the skinny, thin one. Mm. You know, he's kind of like Anthony Daniels, but now.
Yeah.
Maybe okay. Maybe he can steal C-3PO from Anthony Daniels.
He probably will.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
And then you've got Liz as well, Liz Sherman, who is the object of Hellboy's affections.
Yeah.
Which is convenient, considering she can...
Control fire.
Yeah. And withstand it, and as can he. Well, no, he can't control it, but he can withstand it.
Yeah.
Being a Hellboy and all.
Absolutely. Hellboy, he's constantly shaving down his horns.
That's right. Oh, yeah, he falls on down with the old electric... thing,
which is quite funny.
Yeah.
Oh, good noise.
I'm gonna insert a fucking proper one there.
Don't.
All right. Okay.
All right. Right. So, talk me through it.
So, well, the bad guys are basically it's these Nazis come back again for some reason. The bad guy's wife, girlfriend, whoever, object of his affections, brings him back to life. And you've got this weird robotic clockwork
ninja
Nazi called Cronin, ninja Nazi with blades on its arms and everything. Mm. Kind of a cool character, yeah. Bring back the main dude to life, and it's basically like, right, okay, plan B? Nah, plan A again. I want to open up this portal. Mm. So they set about but they need Hellboy to do that.
Yeah.
Is the new plan. We need Hellboy to become what he is, which is the bringer about of the end of... I don't know if it's the end of mankind, but it's the bringing about of the apocalypse, isn't it?
Yeah. But this is... there's two instances in these films, and it's one... It happens in both films, is what I'm trying to say, is that the bad guy tries to say, come on, Hellboy, come with us.
Yeah.
Be bad. Be who you're meant to be.
Mm.
And that is kind of touched upon in the second one as well, with... Mm. Prince Nawada, whatever it is.
Yeah, that's right.
But we'll mention that later. But yeah, and that if there is a Hellboy 3, I don't want that to be a thing that he's is a Hellboy's.
Well, that is the thing, is that Del Toro says in Hellboy 3 he will bring it up. He will fulfill his destiny.
Oh.
Yeah, but that could mean anything. That could mean that he sets it off at the beginning of the film, and then the rest of the film is him putting things right again.
Yeah.
Or does it mean at the end of the film he will bring about the end of the world, and then that's it.
That's it.
Wah,
no more.
Wah, wah. Yeah. That's who knows? Good. But there was also the rumour of, oh, we're going to bring back the bad guys from the first one as well, including Cronin.
Nah. But in the back for the third film. We're going to plan it again. Third time the charm.
Yeah. Hellboy 17. Right, dust myself off. Right, fuck this. We're going to get it right this time. Plan A.
Right. Lads, come on, alright? Come on, We've tried so hard so many times. This is not the dress rehearsal anymore.
We're having a fucking henchman that's full of sand.
Yeah.
Right, so at the same time as them going about, you know, their diabolical scheme, you've got, they release, because they steal something from a museum, and they release this beast called Samuel, who is a beast who...
Is this the one,
it can resurrect itself. Every time you kill it will resurrect. And if you blow it in two, it will resurrect as two. Or every time you kill it, it resurrects as two.
Yeah.
And you get this elongated middle section of the film where Hellboy's fighting this thing in this gallery and in the sewers and in the subway until he finally manages to destroy it. In the process, they lose a couple of agents along the way.
Yeah.
And Abe gets put out of commission because he gets injured. And then you see those beasts again at the end, and Liz, in the end, is the one that has to take them out from her amazing fire abilities.
Yeah.
But you've also got, as another strand, the introduction of a new agent at the BPRD, which is John Myers, played by Rupert Evans.
Mm.
And he is basically the audience. He's basically there to be told what the Bureau is, who Hellboy is, what they're all up to, blah, 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 and then be Hellboy's kind of sidekick for a while, even though Hellboy doesn't like him very much.
Yeah.
And then at some point he has the fucking nerve to go hit on Hellboy's girl.
Yeah.
Which he blatantly tries to do halfway through, but, you know, doesn't succeed. So, and the great thing about his character is in the sequel, they pay lip service to him, where Liz is like, yeah, you had him shipped off to the Antarctica.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is the weak part of the film. And it's, but yeah. I don't know if they had to, but that's what they chose to do, was to give us a character who would introduce us to the world that we could follow.
I mean, for the general audience, I say the general audience.
Mm.
Like, you know, you should be... You don't want to be part of the general audience.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you kind of did need it. There's a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot to take in.
No, absolutely.
With this film. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, fairly exposition heavy. And that's the trouble with having a bad guy that has a weird scheme that involves a weird magic this, and I need to get this magic that. And you get that in the second as well. I need this three pieces of this thing to put together, and then I can open up this and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Is that it's a lot of talking.
Yeah.
The second one, though, they managed to discover ways of doing that in a very visually exciting way.
Mm.
And we'll talk about that when we get to the second one. This one, a little bit less so. You know, I didn't want to watch Hellboy on a rooftop with some kid throwing stones at Agent Myers as he's trying to chat up Liz on a park bench somewhere. The only good thing about that sequence is that it kept cutting back to the base, where you see John Hurt getting confronted by the bad guys, which was when he was then assassinated.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, but it's constantly good fun, though. I don't want to say the one-liners are hilarious, because can you think of any one-liners that Hellboy says that are memorable, that you quote to your mates?
No.
Yeah, he's just very entertaining. He just has the right attitude, but he doesn't necessarily have the same kind of one-liners that you'd expect from, you know, other types of action or superhero or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah,
yours.
Yeah. Right, so from there, the film just kind of carries on to, I suppose, let's just talk about the end when...
Yeah, they go into this big tomb thing, and that's quite cool, because they have to, like, wake up this corpse, don't they, and it's really pissed off for him waking it up.
Yeah.
and they have to... I'll tell you what I like about that sequence is that they go in there, and they get split up, but they go in there, and there's all this weird catacombs and mazes and shit going on, and I love all that kind of stuff, but it's when he finally confronts the character Cronin, and has a fight with him, Manning steps in and actually helps him out.
Yeah,
and this is the boss, you know, him and the boss don't get on. They've been shouting at each other right up until this point, and it's the first time that they actually work together.
Mm.
But the great thing is that once he's chucked the character of Cronin into this pit, and then chucked that giant fucking cog on top of him, is that he goes to light a cigar, and Manny's like looking at him like, what are you doing? Because he's trying to get his Zippo working, and he goes, you don't do it like that, you light it with a match. And he shows him how to smoke a cigar properly, and I was like, oh, that's cool, they're actually finally bonding.
Yeah.
And what fucks me off is that in the sequel, they just took that moment and just threw it out completely.
Yeah.
Yeah. More on that when we come to the second one. But that was a nice little moment. And then, like I said, you then have Liz take care of the Samuel beasties, which then, for some reason, knocks everybody out, and then they all wake up, and then it's the bad guys going, right, now be the person you're supposed to be, and he grows his fucking horns.
Yeah.
And then he goes, actually, fuck it, snaps them off, and... Cause that's it, because Agent Myers is, like, tied up, and he's like, you can do it! You know, don't, you know... Don't listen to them. Be good, kind of thing. Yeah. And I think he gets the upper hand or foot on the girl that's there.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's quite cool, because he trips her up, and when she lands, he whacks his foot down on her neck, and I was like, fucking fantastic. He's actually done something, and he snaps someone's neck in a really cool way.
Yeah.
No, she's still alive. Bollocks. Yeah. Because she then gets consumed by the big beastie thing that the bad guy becomes. Now, this is where I call bullshit, where the film loses serious points. Giant fucking beastie to fight in the end. After you've beaten a bad guy, turns into a big beast, then you have to beat a giant CGI thing.
Yeah.
Blade did this. Not Blade 2, which Del Toro did, but Blade 1 did this. But you beat the fucking bad guy, and then he turns into a giant blob, and then you have to beat a giant blob. Didn't we suspect this at the end of...
it's like
that?
Every video game,
47 isn't it? Fucking Ronin. Didn't it look like there was a big fucking monster you had to fight?
Yeah.
Have you seen that yet? No, me neither.
But it's like every video game. It's like you beat the boss, but then the boss becomes a bigger boss.
Just resurrects into this thing because he's half possessed with some special power, and you're just like, fuck off.
Yeah.
Tentacles and shit flailing around.
Yeah, I just want to be finished the game now.
Oh.
Dinner's ready.
Yeah, just get me to... Yeah. Yeah, so I really didn't like that. It was unnecessary. And a waste of fucking budget as well.
Yeah.
You remember how cheaper this one would have been without that?
True.
Because I was satisfied with what he'd done already.
I know, I remember watching that, and when the first time watching it, and when that happened, he said, oh, God, more, don't need this. But then it finishes, and they kiss, and there's flames, and it's lovely.
Yeah, and the end, and I was like, yeah, that was kind of cool. It wasn't perfect. I'm rating it 4.
Yeah, I'll give it a 3. This one a 3.
Okay.
Yeah. Because there were bits in it that kind of annoyed me.
Yeah.
Much the same as yourself.
It's not a strong 4, but it's a 4.
Okay, 3.5. 3.5.
Yeah, I think if I went down, I wouldn't go below 3.5. Yeah, that sounds about right, actually, 3.5.
Yeah.
All right, well, settle on that then. 3.5 overall.
3.5 for Hellboy.
Yeah.
But then the Golden Army.
Yes.
Does get a higher rating for me.
Good.
But we'll talk about that
now. Because there's things in it that they do a lot better. Now, like I said, so this is 4 years later.
Mm.
Strange amount of time. Usually you get them within a couple of years or 20 years later. So, but 4 years. They came back. And like I said, straight away, I'm pissed off because... I'm happy because you get a little flashback and you see John Hurt again. You're like, yay, cool, there's John Hurt.
Yeah.
Because I saw his name in the cast and I was like, oh no, they're going to bring him back to life. But then I saw it was a flashback, and I was like, that's cool. And it's basically just there to tell the young Hellboy...
the story of the Golden Army.
The story of the Golden Army, and the animated sequence that they use for this, the type of animation, stop motion, and so on, is beautiful. It's so well designed.
Yeah, it looks great.
And it is, and it's an exposition scene. And if you just had two people fucking telling each other and looking at pictures, you'd be like... But because of the way they put this together, it's like, wow, you really know how to get away with what is clearly exposition on the page.
Yeah.
Solved. Problem solved. So, that was nice. But then I'm immediately pissed off because it's the same old shit again. It's back at the BPRD, whatever the hell it's called. And he's still pissing about, and he's still blowing holes in walls, and he's still pissing off Manning, and Manning is... even more of an asshole than he was in the first one. And I was like, I thought those two kind of, you know, worked that out. I was kind of hoping that they would, because I liked I was looking forward to them sort of not being buddies, but sort of getting along.
Yeah.
But here it's completely the opposite. And even in the end, you get to the very end scene, it's like, yeah, no, they're just completely off each other. So
I did quite like the you know, and they're dealing with those tiny pixie fairy things in the...
Yeah, the tooth fairies.
Tooth fairies, yeah. That's exactly it. And they...
especially like eating teeth.
Yeah. And they blow up the room, and Hellboy... Manning is there and saying, just, please, just don't be seen.
Yeah,
just
that's right, because he's forever having to cover him up.
Yeah, because the world isn't sure if he's a real thing.
Yeah.
I thought that was just... That was a bit... That was boss. That was good. And he just kind of gets exploded out of the building.
The only way that they can get rid of him is by Liz just setting herself off, and he just finds the nearest fucking window in Stan Lessie, doesn't he?
Just like gets blown out of the window onto the street with all the
press.
Didn't
he say something like, "Oh, look, here, all right, world, here I come," or something? And it goes into slow motion, and some really cheesy song starts playing as he flies out into the street.
So happy. I remember when I rewatched that, I just thought, oh, this is good.
Yeah.
I do prefer the sequel for a few reasons, and I think the kind of Hellboy goes uber Hellboy in this.
Yeah.
No,
he's clearly just really, really comfortable in the role.
Yeah.
At this point. Yeah, and Doug Jones, they let him voice the character. And I'm like, does he sound that much different from the first guy? Not really. Why didn't they let him do it in the first place?
No, I didn't. I didn't think there was any difference either.
Yeah.
So
villain wise, apart from those little pixies who are set free by Prince Nuada, we've got Prince Nuada, and he's got a sister, Princess Nuala, who isn't a bad guy. She kind of goes on a run from him. Mm. He's, trying to get this three pieces of this crown put together so he can unleash the Golden Army. And
the Golden Army are an indestructible army.
Yes.
Essentially.
Metal robotic toys, basically. Toy line, here they come. And, for some reason, spends a lot of time hanging out in the sewer, because you see him practicing with his weapons. It's basically just Luke Goss fucking showing off his skills again.
Yeah.
Because he did a lot of that in Blade 2. He was the bad guy in Blade 2. And essentially plays a very similar, tragic character.
Yeah.
No problem with that. I don't have a problem with Luke Goss. I'm surprised I've not seen him in many other things. He seems to do a lot of other people's straight-to-DVD sequels, like Death Race.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, taking on the Statham role. But he's fine, and not bad for the guy that used to be the drummer of Bros. They're before your time and all, mate.
All right, that's fine.
Yeah. But story-wise, it is kind of the mechanics of it are very similar.
Yeah, there's bad guys need to put something together in order to bring on the apocalypse.
Yeah.
And they, as I mentioned earlier, they ask Hellboy to join them because they'd be stronger with him, and Hellboy says, no, I'm going to be a good guy.
Yeah.
There's a fight, and then after beating the Golden Army, he has to defeat a bigger boss.
But I want to talk about, what's the name of Luke Goss's sidekick, Mr. Wink? Returning Brian Steele again, who had played...
Oh, the cave troll?
Yeah, that's right, with a big iron fist.
Yeah.
Yeah, who gets taken out about halfway through, because the same actor that played the big beastie in the last film, he played the big beastie in this one. And because they've got a lot of almost like Jim Henson like puppetry work going on with this thing's face, movements and stuff, and it looks great. I loved all that. It's all it's largely all practical.
Yeah.
But I love the little showdown he has with him in the market.
In the black market where
all the goblins and stuff hang out. That scene is... They must have spent so much time putting that together, because you can literally just watch it again and again and again and see something different going on in the background in whatever direction you're looking in. The attention to detail is fantastic.
Yeah.
Although it was kind of obvious, and I was like, uh-oh, someone's going to go in that mincer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
what was
going to happen.
But that was very... it was very light... had a very light tone, that fight, because he ends up smashing this thing's fist, and then it starts grumbling at him like a child.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, what's your problem? You're the one that started the fight with me.
Yeah.
they start having that kind of a conversation before it then gets dooms itself to the mincer. That was all great, and I love when he, because again, like in the first one, the bad guys infiltrate the good guys' lair and confront them in the fucking library, and Hellboy's mentor being killed, which he was in the first one, and this one Hellboy gets injured with this part of the guy's spear, and they have to go heal him, and they take him to this weird creature with this giant sort of plate like head, and it's like half angel, half winged beast, whatever the fuck it is. It's just a terrific looking creation. And its head it's got like a big crack on it as well, on the design of it. Yeah, it was good stuff.
Yeah.
Mm.
But in saving Hellboy's life, the angel says that Hellboy is now going to bring on the doom of the world.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, they're saying that in the next film, that is what he will do.
Yeah.
One way or another. But never mind all that. He recovers and they go, right, fuck it, let's go get them. So they head off to, as you say, the ending where they confront Princess Nuala, have a bit of a...
Yeah. Well, we've failed to mention the new character.
Oh, God, we forgot to mention the fucking Johann Kraus!
Yes. Who is voiced by Seth MacFarlane. And
yes.
Every time watching this film, all I keep thinking when he's talking is, if you've ever seen an episode of Family Guy where Stewie does a German accent, that's the exact same voice.
Oh, really?
It's the exact same voice, and it always bugged me so much. But Johann Kraus was quite good. He was like...
You compare him to Agent Myers in the last film, it's like a huge improvement because he's antagonistic to Hellboy, and in the end, they're buddies.
Yeah.
He visually... really, really bizarre idea.
Really cool.
A guy that's in this outfit, but he's also just fucking missed.
He's just gas.
And he can come out of that and still sort of take control of things.
Yeah.
And what he does in the end, battle scenes, when he takes control of one of the army and starts slashing them all to bits is fantastic. Mm. Yeah. No, really cool. I like it when he beats them up in the locker room.
With the lockers. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, I think I can take you. And Hellboy just gets beaten up with a beer in his hand. I didn't have that problem because I'm not a big Family Guy fan, so I wasn't familiar with that.
Okay.
But I can see how you could.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you know, I thought he was a very entertaining new character. And the regulars were all good again. The rest of them.
Abe Sapien was good. Liz was good.
Yeah.
Everything was...
And as usual, the bad guy goes out semi-fucking tragically, like he did in Blade 2.
Yeah, that... Because once you found out that every time the brother gets hurt, the sister gets hurt too, so the sister's going to sacrifice herself in an hour.
And Abe fancies her too. Yeah. Oh, it's going to be sad.
Yeah. Because I think she says it to Abe.
Mm.
She says, for every pain I feel, my brother... Or something like those.
Mm.
And it's like it just kind of clicks, and says, "Oh, cool! Oh, so you're going to kill yourself in an hour?" Okay.
Well, does she tell him every time I feel pain? He does. If I was Abe, I'd be like, "Oh yeah, you feel that, do you? Feel that?"
You can't hit a girl. But once you found that out, that was what was going to happen, wasn't it?
That's how you cheat in that last fight, isn't it? When he's fighting Hellboy, if it looks like he's about to kill Hellboy, you just lop off one of her legs.
Yeah.
And then suddenly he's like, shit, hopping about.
Just chop off her head.
Yeah.
That's all you had to do. And it would have stopped everything.
How it should have ended. Would you like to picture an idea for Hellboy 2?
Instead of a final fight.
Yeah.
Hellboy's just going to take out his big gun and shoot the sister in the head.
Yeah, just blow her head off halfway through the film.
And then that'll be that.
The other sequence we failed to talk about was after they dealt with all the little bugs and Noel comes
big
up
plant?
And he throws the little bean.
Get to water.
One of these horrible things that I hate is whenever someone throws something and it's bouncing on the street and you know it's going to end up in a fucking drain.
Yeah.
Someone always chases after it to tense music and you're always like, oh fuck off! I know it's going to go in and they're going to not get it.
Yeah.
I hate it when I see that trope.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, the giant flower that comes out and starts attacking them. Bizarre,
yeah.
But beautiful.
Mm.
Looks great, but it was so bizarre. I watch it with two minds because he's also like looking after a baby and going coochie coo and all that. That sort of half annoys me. But when he ends up finishing taking this thing out, normally, and I think Del Toro has said so on his commentary, although you can fucking see it. Normally, when a bad guy gets taken out in bloody, glorious fashion, it's blood and guts everywhere, right? All over the walls. Here, it's all moss and growth.
Yeah.
So it's almost like the opposite of something that's gory. It's something very pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all this moss and grass starts growing on, like all the cars where all this goop lands on. So you get a very sort of weird looking outcome. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Bizarre. Really bizarre scene.
No, it was good.
But that's what is good about a director like him, is that he'll think of these ideas. Let's do this instead.
Yeah, but the reason behind this guy is that this big plant thing is the last of its kind, isn't it? That's what Nawada said, is that to save the people, you have to kill this. If you kill this, you kill the species, or something like that.
Mm.
And he does do it. Correctly so.
Yeah. Yeah. So, no, I haven't spoke about that. Yeah, no, the second one is better. But like I said, there's still things in the first one that I do like, that take me back to it. But, yeah, about even on a budget of $85 million, in 2008, it's amazing the amount of stuff they've done with it.
Mm.
How far they stretched it. Talking about all of those, that market we talked about, with the amount of animatronics involved with all those creatures and designs and stuff, as well as effects on top. The end climax of all that Golden Army and the place where they do it in with all the giant cogs going everywhere. Yeah. You know, there is set design going on here, there's creature design going on, there is amazing special effects, like with the big giant fucking flower and a little tooth fairies, and also your main cast being done up. They've stretched that budget really far.
Yeah, they did.
They made it look twice as expensive.
Yeah,
considering it looks as expensive easily as a Marvel movie, if not more so, because it has a lot of practical stuff, and yet Marvel movies are twice as much.
Yeah,
the cost. Take that, Disney. So yeah, no, it's a fantastic job, and I'm just annoyed that they still find it a risky venture.
I know.
Because although it's both of them have sold on disc, and they both did, you know. I mean, all right, you say you don't just make it back your budget, you've also got to at least double your money because of marketing.
Mm.
All right, fine, so they've just about scraped it back. But we're now two films in, they've both got a very good reputation. The director has a very good, an even bigger reputation.
Yeah.
He's since gone on to do Pacific Rim, which was a huge hit. I fucking hate it, but it's a huge hit.
Yeah.
He's now doing 2 and 3, did you say?
Apparently there's a third one.
Oh, my God. Oh, God, that's not what I need. Anyway, so if they're going to do well, then shit. God, But it's literally just finding the company that will get, you know, put the money up. But I think if they keep fighting for it, then hopefully so. Yeah. But having said that,
Perlman's 64. Yeah.
So they might want to do it soon.
Yeah, pretty soon.
But he was still advocating it this year, Perlman. He was still saying, I'm still wanting it to happen. Whereas I think earlier this year, Del Toro was going, it's not on the radar.
Okay.
Which is a shame.
I mean, if they do manage to get a third one, I already know what the teaser poster should be.
Yeah.
Right now. And it should be just because at the end of this film, Liz is pregnant.
With twins. Yep.
So that's all it should be, just two baby Hellboys on a white on a white poster. That should be it. I think that'd be funny.
Hellboy 3 Hellboys.
Good. And then that'll be it, won't it? They'll need Hellboy's sons to bring upon the apocalypse.
Oh, God. Right, quickly before we finish, have you seen you haven't seen the animated cartoons?
No, I have not.
They did a couple. They've got titles that sound like Game of Thrones books. Oh, there's a bike outside. Storm of Swords or...
Well, that literally is a Game of Thrones book.
It is. Well, that's where I probably pinched it from. I don't remember what the hell they're called. But they are... Yeah, they're not bad. Because they're produced by Del Toro.
Mm.
And the voice cast is the actual main cast from the movies as well. Which is quite good. But yeah, no, they're definitely worth checking out. They're not great. They're like 3-star adventures.
Right.
Kind of like go, that's all right, I guess.
Nice.
But yeah, I think it's just 2 of them. So like with the films, they just made 2. But they are available, and I think they're sort of about 40 minutes each, maybe an hour.
Sword of Storms.
Sword of Storms and Blood and Iron. Storm. Does that not sound like
Storm of Swords? And yeah, they do.
Yeah. Yeah. 75 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's longer than I thought. So that is sort of feature length. And it's basically just them on a, the next quest, the next mission. Yeah. Yeah. Go check them out.
I will.
Excellent.
Right.
All right, well, on that note, that is the Hellboy series. Oh, Hellboy 2, what are you rating that?
4.
4? Good. Yeah, I'm a much, much more solid, secure 4 for that. Cool. Yes, please do give us another one.
Yes,
and we'll give you more podcasts.
Seems like a fair trade.
Indeed. All right then, Chris, thank you very much.
Thank you.